Good evening, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls at least for a few minutes, because we're hoping, against hope, that we're going to have Dr. Garth Nicholson with us this evening. And Dr. Nicholson is back in Washington, D.C., testifying before some committee there, and he was going to be with us, but he may very well have been delayed. Something may have come up. So right now, I think we'll talk about some of the other things that we've been concerned about. And, of course, as you know, Dr. Nicholson is a microbiologist. He, of course, is into all sorts of things as far as infections are concerned. And one of the things I think that bothers him is that some of the new diseases that we see out there appear to be genetically engineered. And one of the things that really bothered him was the mycoplasma infection. Now, everybody knows that AIDS is related to the HIV virus. That is what you were told over and over again. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, why, if it's repeated often enough, why people will believe it. And I'm not saying it's ridiculous to believe that HIV is the origin, at least part of the origin of AIDS. But what is so amazing is that we have an entirely different disease in the United States than they have in Africa, than they have in Thailand. Now, where did all of these new diseases come from? We have really about eight different types of AIDS, or of this, whatever we want to call this disease. We have HIV-1, we have HIV-2. Under HIV, we have a type O, and then the regular type that most people have, and then under the regular type, we have AB, C, D, and E, and maybe even an F. So all subdivisions are different, totally different, and they don't change. In other words, we started out with HIV-1B here in the United States. In Africa, they had HIV-1A and HIV-1C. And over in Thailand, I think it was HIV-1E. And on Western Africa, they have HIV-2. And don't ask me where the O comes in. But they're all different diseases. But the most interesting thing, at least here in the United States, where they were very, very carefully studied by a doctor back at the Armed Forces of Institute of Pathology, is they all had a mycoplasma infection. In other words, 100% of the HIV cases here in the United States that we associate with AIDS also had a concomitant mycoplasma infection, and that was a genetically engineered mycoplasm, because it had on the shell of the mycoplasm, or whatever it is, they don't have a normal cell wall, but some sort of a membrane, there was a molecule that came from the substance of HIV. So this is genetically engineered. Now, who would have genetically engineered? Why would they have genetically engineered this? Well, we know that the Germans were working on mycoplasma as a means of creating disease. In other words, there have always been mycoplasms around, but the Germans, during the Second World War, were working on how to make this very pathogenic. Because ordinarily, of course, the mycoplasm is not that pathogenic. But the mad Nazi scientists, were working on new means of killing large numbers of people. And so they were working on the mycoplasm. And then, of course, at the end of the Second World War, instead of punishing the wicked Nazis, so many of them were brought over here to the United States and allowed to work within our scientific community, work certainly within the rocketry. They were in psychiatry, mind control. They were working on biological experiments as well. And we brought, under Operation Paperclip, about 1,000 Nazis here to the United States, in my understanding. And, of course, the OSS and the CIA helped so many of the others to escape into South America, Martin Bormann, Adolf Eichmann, Klaus Barbie, Joseph Mengele. You go down the list of all those names that we associate with the atrocities. Well, they were helped to escape to South America by your helpful OSS and CIA. Why? Because there is a common occult origin behind all of these organizations. And if you really want to get into the background of this, it's covered in a book called Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt. And, of course, it's very interesting to try to get a copy today. Why, they're almost impossible to get, $125, $150 for this little book that originally sold probably not for more than $10. But you see, every effort has been made to suppress this information. Some of this is included in the book we carry, entitled The Medusa File by Craig Roberts. That's the one that was actually presented to, I think it was it HarperCollins? I can't remember which one of the major publishers back in New York City had actually declined to publish that because somebody from the CIA had put pressure on them. They didn't want that information getting out. Craig Roberts tells that story of getting a call late at night one time from one of the editors of this major publisher in New York saying, "You've really got to get that book published, Craig. That's a wonderful book, this Medusa File." And Craig said, "Well, if it's so great a book, why won't you publish it?" And the reply was, "I'd lose my job if I published that. Don't you know the CIA has agents planted here in all of the major publishing houses? And that's the sort of information they don't want to get out." Well, of course, we actually have the book. We carry it, the Medusa File. Craig published it himself. And it goes into the background of Operation Paperclip. It goes into how the CIA brought the Nazis scientists over here, the military and the CIA brought the Nazi scientists here to the United States and helped many of them escape into South America. Why would they do that? Why? Because all of the wars are contrived. That's the great tragedy. And there is a common occult background behind the people who rule all the governments of the world. You see, the ruler of this world is Satan himself, and his dominions there are working all throughout society, and most people don't even recognize they're there. But when you understand the evil that is part and parcel to the world in which we live, then so many of the things that are going on, the horror of war, the horrible horror of strange new epidemics, all of these things are increasingly understandable. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and we'll carry on this discussion. Hopefully that Dr. Nicholson will soon be with us. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and I guess we're going to have to open up our telephone lines for callers. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Give us a call if you have any question at all, what we're talking about, or there's something that you would like to discuss. Why? I guess this is going to have to be open lines. Under any circumstances, there are many, many genetically created diseases. And I was saying the Nazi scientists came to this country, and some of them continued working to make the mycoplasm organism more pathogenic. And apparently they were successful. It was in the early 1950s that the CIA began employing scientists for genetic engineering. In fact, all of the genetic engineering that has gone on today is an outgrowth of these macabre experiments financed with your tax money, always in the name of course, we wanted to keep ahead of those wicked communists. Of course, we were financed the wicked communists, but that we use that as a justification. You always had to have a justification for carrying out these experiments, creating new diseases, and we know that they experimented with the pathogenic mycoplasm at a place called Huntsville in Texas, and this was a prison. They went in. Apparently, they had given the prisoners there a vaccine. This is my understanding, anyway, from the woman who track this whole story down. And then, of course, they infected the prisoners. And I don't know whether the vaccine worked or whether it didn't work, but we know that the mycoplasm infected many of the prisoners, and they died. And then, of course, it got into the guards, and they died or became extremely ill. And then the guards took it home to their families and the children and their wives, and you had a tremendous outbreak of people with MS and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, so-called Lou Gehrig's disease, these progressive degenerative neurological diseases. I mean, way out of all proportion to what you'd expect in a small community. You'd have dozens and dozens of cases of these progressive neurological diseases, and it was about that time that some of the people locally began trying to find out what was really going on. And of course, these people at the prison denied that there was any sort of experiment going on there in the prisoners. But the people in the community were very, very persistent, and we actually could refer to this in one of my newsletters. And they were actually eventually able to get some of the records that had not yet been shredded, finding that it was a contract between the federal government and the prison to experiment on the prisoners there with the mycoplasm. And this is the basis. I think this was back in the late 1960s. And, of course, we have been experimenting on prisoners and, of course, on the general population as well ever since then in all sorts of ways. And those of you who have not heard my interviews with Don Scott, who's gone into this and investigated, he's a Canadian. He has many of the contracts where, for instance, the American government would contract with the Canadians to breed, I don't know, 100 million mosquitoes, something like that, so they could infect them and turn them loose just to see what was going to happen. And they've introduced all sorts of new diseases into the world. You know, one time there was a barrier between animals and human beings, so that diseases didn't go from animals to humans. Oh, there were a few of them we got from cows, like indolent fever and tuberculosis, but most animal diseases did not infect human beings. But as a result of the genetic experiments that were carried out, the scientists found out that if you could use parts of viruses, like maybe a virus that produces cancer, and you could take part of that virus, that you could use that to be able to take an animal disease and grow it into human, or human genes and grow them in animals, or a fish gene and grow it in a tomato, or a tomato gene and grow it in a human being. Who knows what they're doing? They've done all sorts of incredible things, and they've opened Pandora's box. The genie is out of the bottle. They have created a situation now where animal diseases can readily infect human beings. Never did before. But, of course, they would never want to admit the truth of this. There was an article I was reading just this evening in the Wall Street Journal, today's Wall Street Journal, about how somebody had died over in Thailand because of a bird flu. And how this was, of course, suggesting that there was going to be another worldwide pandemic. One person has died of a bird flu, and they're projecting this is going to spread all across the world, and Americans are going to be endangered, and a lot of them are going to die because of this new influenza that's coming from a bird flu that's over in Thailand. One person is dead. Now, what are they doing? Well, they're conditioning you so you'll take your influenza shot. Why? Well, Dr. Fundberg, who is one of the world's leading experts on the vaccines, has shown that if you're over, I think it's 60, and you take three or four influenza shots over a five-year period, 10 years later, you have a 1,000% increase in the chance of Alzheimer's disease. And, of course, Alzheimer's disease precedes death. Why is this? Because it's the mercury and the influenza vaccine, at least that's presumed to be the case, the mercury, and there may be other things in the influenza vaccine that of course, make you more susceptible to Alzheimer's disease. This is a scientifically proven fact, one of the leading scientists in the world, but I bet you'll never read that in Time magazine, or Newsweek magazine, or U.S. News and World Report, and why not? Why? Because they don't want you to know. Our reality is created by what we read, and remember that 95% of the major media in the United States is controlled by one of six major corporations, and that would be Time Warner, and that would be Disney, that would be Vivendi, Viacom, Fox, and Bertelsmann, and General Electric might be in there as well. I'm not sure their relationship to Vivendi and and Viacom, but certainly there are just a very, very few major corporations that control the media and ultimately control what the American people think. Those people who listen to our program this afternoon with Jerry Smith on genetic engineered food. The book is Seeds of Deception. Incidentally, we are carrying this book on genetic engineering of food, and you need to get this book, you need to study it, and then you want to get the four tape set we're putting together. But Jerry Smith talked about how so many people had been threatened, doing everything they possibly could to silence people who were dissenting against the genetic engineering and genetic engineer food. Well, let's go ahead and take a call from Matt while we're waiting to get somebody else on the line, and we'll open our lines at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But as far as the AIDS is concerned, this epidemic we talk about, let me point out, is being used for population control. How could I say that? Why, because we're not trying to stop its spread. Doctors know how to stop the spread of a disease. You identify who is infected. You try to stop them from giving it to others. And everybody who suggests doing that, oh, if we try to stop this disease, we'll drive it underground. If we try to do standard public health tracing and tracking of this disease and routine testing, why, we'll drive people away from doctors. Oh, terrible. Why, you know, the test isn't 100% accurate, you don't want to bury this disease, do you? Oh, we can't use standard public health techniques. And as a result of the fact we have not used standard public health techniques, they've killed over 250,000 homosexuals and another 250,000 people here in America. Over 500,000 people have died in America, an unnecessary epidemic. And those of you who haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, really ought to get it and read it and understand really what's going on in the world today. And remember, of course, it's more than HIV, and there are all different types of HIV, and this is engineered actually to be much more lethal or much more pathological to blacks than to whites. Whites have a certain amount of resistance to getting it. Blacks don't, simply because of their genetic makeup. And that's why 60% of the new AIDS cases or HIV infections in the United States are in blacks. You see, it is a racially targeted disease, and nobody wants to say that. That's why, for instance, in Botswana, 40% of the women coming in, pregnant women coming in for prenatal checking, are actually HIV infected. That's why we do not have the high rates of it here. They're not any more promiscuous in Botswana than they are here. But, of course, it's being used to eliminate the blacks. There is a racial component to what's going on today, because there really are evil and wicked people who believe in eugenics, and as Adolf Hitler and Margaret Sanger and the other disciples of Madame Blavatsky, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, the woman who founded Theosophy, all of these people, of course, believe in Aryan superiority, and I just happen to be an Aryan. But I believe every person is made in the image and likeness of God. And I think what's going on today, the only way explanation is organized evil. Well, let's go to Matt, calling from Seattle, Washington. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Hi, not too bad. Yourself?
No complaints. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. What I had a question on is, well, you'd mentioned influenza just a little bit ago, and specifically the vaccine that they have, and you said something about the mercury in it that they have, and that studies show that if it's taken, I believe you said five years consecutively?
No, basically, if you're over 60, and okay, you take an influenza shot 3 or 4 years out of five, why, 10 years down the line, your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease is increased 1,000%. In other words, tenfold increase of Alzheimer's disease. The research was done by Dr. Fudenberg, F-U-D-E-N-B-E-R-G. Go up on the internet, look it up. If you can't find it, give us a call. We'll send you a copy of material on him, his abstract of his. He's been doing this he's in his 80s. He's one of the world's leading experts on vaccines, and he points out that there's a direct relationship between the influenza vaccine and Alzheimer's disease. Now, this is recorded in the medical literature. Anybody who's studying it knows that. They're just not telling you that. I hope you're not taking your influenza shots.
I'm a little bit younger than 60 years old, so I don't quite need them yet.
Well, but even if you're not, don't take them, because there's a toxic dose of mercury in every influenza shot, and they've left it there. And
but isn't it a rather small amount as far as like the vaccine itself? Isn't it rather small? I mean, I would think that there's more mercury in my mouth and the fillings in my mouth than there is in what I would get in a vaccine, isn't there?
Oh, there certainly is. In fact, you shouldn't have those fillings in your mouth. They are toxic to you, too. In fact, there's a definite relationship between the mercury, the number of fillings you have, and the frequency of your the fact that you're going to get Alzheimer's disease. If you want to hang on, we'll be glad to talk to you about that.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our regularly scheduled guest isn't here. So if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Matt is calling from Seattle, Washington, and he's saying, well, I've got mercury in my mouth. And he's absolutely right. Your fillings are toxic, and you'd be a lot better off without them. And if you'd like to get more information, we've got a great four-tape set on this, or you can go up to Dr. Boyd Haley's website. He's the professor of chemistry, chairman of the department at the University of Kentucky. He's written extensively on this, and the relationship between fillings and Alzheimer's disease. Matt, are you still there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Yeah. And, of course, the thing is that we have many sources of mercury. They keep telling us, oh, we just have to be so careful about eating tuna fish. Well, you got a very tiny amount of mercury in tuna fish, but you get it, for instance, for a child, a child, maybe a year old, and, of course, we're told we got to get our children influenza shots. They get about 60 times the recommended dose of mercury when they take an influenza shot. Now, every child will not respond the same, but some children can control and can excrete the mercury. Others can't. And, of course, they're able to determine that by the hair sample. So if you have you're not putting it out into your hair, while you're probably not excreting it, and as a result, it's getting in your brain and doing real damage. And there's a very definite relationship between childhood vaccines that contain mercury and, of course, the autism and the other problems, the ADH and ADHD, and even metal deficiency, directly related to the mercury in the childhood vaccines. They've taken it out, but they're still telling our children, oh, well, you should go ahead and get your influenza shot, because they haven't taken it out of that. And there's no reason at all to put it in there, unless, of course, you want to do damage to people.
So is that what you believe, then?
There are evil and wicked people out there. I believe that there are people who know that it's damaging, and they're allowing it to happen.
Well, something like the FDA, we have a regulatory board in the government that would stop that, wouldn't we?
Absolutely not. In fact, if you listen to our programs regularly, you'll find there's almost like a musical chairs. The people go from working for the vaccine companies into government, and then from the government into the vaccine companies or to the drug companies. I've talked to the various people who've worked for the FDA, who found terrible things that were being done, and reported to their superiors, who said, don't worry about it. And then, of course, they quit their job and went to work, in this instance, for the people who were manufacturing the polio vaccine. Because there were all sorts of monkey viruses in the polio vaccine, and we contaminated the entire population. And they knew that. And they did nothing about it. In fact, I don't know if you know the story of the polio vaccine, but the original polio vaccine came out in 1955. It was known as the Salk vaccine, and everybody was told you got nothing to worry about because, of course, this has been cleared by the government. We've checked it out. It's perfectly safe. The trouble was that it was a lie. Now, you can read a book. It's called The Health Century. The Health Century. It was actually put out by the National Institute of Health. And in that, they tell the story of Dr. Bernice Eddy, who had the job of checking the initial polio vaccine, and she reported it was killing monkeys. It wasn't safe. And they released it anyway, and they killed, I don't know, a dozen, a hundred people, and, you know, I don't know how many people got polio vaccine, and they knew it was contaminated. But that wasn't bad enough, so then they cleaned that up, and then, hold just a moment, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we've got Matt on the line from Seattle, and he was just saying, well, if there was something bad, why wouldn't the FAA intervene? And I said, no, the FAA wouldn't intervene. In fact, they're part of the problem. So anyway, this story is all told in a book put out by the NIH called The Health Sensory. And if you want any more information, you can email me, and I'll get you the author of it. But what happened next was that about 1960, why Dr. Bernice Eddy, who had actually been punished for finding out that the initial polio vaccine made by Cutter was contaminated, Dr. Bernice Eddy snuck into the laboratory where they were working on the polio vaccine. She noticed that the cells were dying, and she hypothesized that there was a cancer virus in the polio vaccine they had given millions of doses to the people all over the United States. And eventually, if it was found out, she was absolutely right. It was a simian virus 40, SV40. It was one of the 40th monkey virus that they actually found. And so here now they've put a monkey virus, and this is a cancer-producing virus, and it's being given, first of all, in the Sabin, pardon me, in the Salk shots, and then in the Sabin vaccine. 90 million doses of that were put out. And even after they found what had happened, the government still allowed them to continue to putting it out for some years afterwards because they did not want to awaken or alarm the American people. It is all, the whole story is there. There's a new book out called The Monkey and the Vaccine, or The Vaccine and the Monkey. And to this very day, a significant part of our population is infected with simian virus 40, which is a cancer-producing virus. In fact, it is the basis of all cancer virus research. And they contaminated the entire population. They're still lying about that. Anything else, Matt?
I guess I'm just kind of like following what you're saying and everything, and I mean, I am a first-time listener,
okay.
So it is possible that I've missed possible points you've already covered, but so say that, you know, okay, I totally understand that to a certain extent, private industry and the government oftentimes are kind of in each other's pockets as far as CEOs and government agents, you know, going back and forth between the two, but it seems that if it was something of this major, then that it would seem to me that that the information would get out more, as far as it would become, you know, public knowledge in a faster fashion. You know?
All right, fine. Do you have access to a computer?
Yeah, I do.
All right, why don't you go up there and type in the simian virus 40 and start reading the article. Simian virus 40.
Right a second, I don't. But
okay, fine. Well, if you need more information on this, we can give you all sorts of references on this from the NIH's own book. This whole story I've just told you, because that isn't the end of it. It gets even worse from there because they changed then from the rhesus monkey that had the simian virus 40 growing in it to the green monkey. And of course, they said now, see, we're not going to give people any more of the simian virus 40 virus. So what happened? Why, the green monkey had all sorts of cytomegalic viruses. So then we contaminated the entire population with cytomegalic viruses. Incredible. These things go on, and the reason you don't hear about it is because the media is controlled. It's controlled by about 6 or 7 major corporations, and they all tie into what I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. And, Matt, I just hope you're going to be a regular listener, and we can intrigue you to challenge what I say. And if you find that I can't verify what I say, then you got nothing to worry about. But if I can verify this from reliable sources, then I hope you're going to join us in this epic struggle to try to awaken the American people.
I would agree with you on that. Definitely the quote unquote liberal media is actually owned by corporations that have, you know, definitely non-liberal agendas. But wouldn't something that's independent like NPR be talking about this more?
Well, I don't know why that they aren't. But who finances the NPR?
Well, the public. I mean,
that's right. It's an extension of the government. Do you really think the government, something that's financed by the government, is going to tell you the truth? I mean, certainly you've got some programs that are very critical of the Bush administration. That's fine, but they're not going to tell you this because, you see, they play a game. You got two parties, both controlled by the same people. They've got to convince you you're getting the truth, so one criticizes the other. But on these really important issues, like the fact that they're poisonous with fluoride and with mercury and with aspartame, and they're suppressing treatments for cancer, they're not going to tell you that. but it's really true. And so just keep listening. Go to my website at RadioLiberty.com. I start pulling down my newsletters, check the references, find out if it's true, and then join us in this epic struggle. Will you, Mike? We're going to have to take a break and appreciate your call, and keep right on listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we'll be back here in just a moment. We've got Sue calling from Santa Cruz. And, of course, we're going to encourage you, if you're out across America, to give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 464-8295, because there's going to be open lines for this evening. And yet, of course, these stories were all true. And remember, the book, of course, was The Health Century, actually published under the auspices of the National Institute of Health. Of course, they were furious when they read the book. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we've got Sue calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Sue. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I appreciate your research and all the information you have to give. And I had, you know, when you were talking about the mosquitoes that the scientists released into, you know, a town to see what would happen, infected mosquitoes, I was thinking about the recent West Nile virus epidemic, and I thought about an article I read recently that said that the most cases of West Nile right at this point was in Phoenix, Arizona. And I thought that's crazy, because Phoenix doesn't even have mosquitoes, and they blamed it on stagnant pools, like swimming pools, not stagnant water, lake water, because there isn't any lake water there. And it didn't make any sense to me that a swimming pool could create mosquitoes all of a sudden. And then I thought about how the mosquitoes seem to be swarming right now in Santa Cruz, and I was wondering what your thoughts on that were.
Well, you know, the incredible thing is, when did the West Nile first come to the United States? West Nile infection was endemic in the western part of the Nile Valley, but we never had this in the United States until 1999. The first cases of West Nile virus was found in New York City, and, of course, if you go back and read what was written at that time, the CIA announced that Saddam Hussein had brought it to the United States, and we've got the articles. You'll find them up on the internet, or you can read my newsletter for July and August of last year, 2003, and we give you the background and all the references on this. So the CIA announces this is Saddam Hussein. Well, you know, if that was really true, they would have brought that out to justify going to war with him. I think that was a CIA cover story. I think that this is a genetic disease. It's been brought here specifically because, you see, there are really too many people in the world. And this is one way to get rid of, certainly the older. Now, the average person is going to get West Nile, and they're not going to get very ill from it. It's not that that deadly a disease, but it's usually the old, the people, you know, who have decreased immunity. And, of course, these people are a real drag on society. Why, they're bankrupt. And, you know, they're sort of useless eaters. They get to be old. And so if they get the disease, they're just going to die off. And there really are people who think that way.
Oh, I believe that.
And that's what's so hard for the average individual to believe. They've never read Jacques Cousteau's remark about how we have to eliminate 350,000 people a day. And for those who question, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you the article out of the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991. And if he really said that, well, why hasn't anybody ever heard of that?
Right.
And hold just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Sue calling from Santa Cruz, and she was asking about West Nile virus, and I just pointed out that the first cases that we ever had in the Western Hemisphere were in 1999, and at that point, in 1999, the CIA announced Saddam Hussein did it. Now, if that was really true, you would think that they would have used that as an excuse for going to war with him, wouldn't you? But they never did. In fact, of course, he'd gotten the West Nile virus from the United States, because we were supplying him with all sorts of biological warfare agents back in the late 1980s. But we can't let the American people know that these terrible weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had, and we had to go to war over there and kill all those people to bring him freedom, those terrible biological warfare agents actually came from the United States, including West Nile virus. But I don't think Saddam Hussein said it over here. He's not that. He may be evil, but he wouldn't be foolish enough to attack us. I think that this was brought over here. Maybe it escaped from some place like Plum Island, right across right across the straits from Lyme, Connecticut, where the first cases of Lyme disease were. And in fact, we carry a book. I think it's called Lab 257, and it's the story of the biological experiments taking place on Plum Island over a period of many years. And they don't want the American people to know that they've been working on these bizarre biological experiments for many years, creating new means of killing people. And anybody who doubts that, we have the testimony by Dr. MacArthur before the House Appropriations Committee in 1969. Dr. MacArthur, representing the military, and he went before the members of Congress, and he said, we have the capacity to create a new disease for which there will be no immune response. And, of course, for $10 million, we can produce this. It'll take us about 5 years. The only reason we haven't gone ahead so far is because there's some people think that this is another means of mass killing. Anybody who wants to see the article, the copy of the government publication, we have it. Well, as far as we know, they gave him the money 6 years later. The first cases of AIDS appeared in homosexuals who had actually taken an experimental vaccine that was given to them, that they took a hepatitis B vaccine. And, of course, by 1981, we recognized the disease. It was given in San Francisco to homosexuals. And would you believe that 75% of the people who took that vaccine contracted AIDS, and most of them are already dead? But you're never going to hear that. Today, about 2% of the homosexuals in San Francisco are infected. Why would 75% of the people who took the vaccine be infected? Have you ever, well, you probably never heard that before, but we got the article actually from the San Francisco Department of Public Health that verified that fact.
Very interesting. I wanted you to go over again that day in November that you're going to be in Santa Cruz.
Oh, this is going to be the 6th of November, and it's going to be out at Aptos Ski Scape Golf Course, and we're going to have, we're going to bring in speakers from outside, and we're going to have, going to start early in the morning, I think about 8:45, going to go through to 5 in the evening, and we're going to be serving lunch, and I think it's going to be a great day. And we've done this the last several years, and actually we've had people from not only across America, but from across the world coming, and hopefully we'll get a good turnout this year.
Well, I hope I can make it.
I hope you can too, Sue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being with us, and let's go to Randy, who's calling from Austin, Texas, about depleted uranium. Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Yeah, I was just wondering what you could possibly tell me about that. I mean, we're still bombing the bejesus out of those poor people over there, and I mean, last week alone, I heard that the 2 weeks that they had the little siege against the mosque, they killed over 2,000 people. And we just got this unopposed air power dropping these bombs on these people that have, you know, this plutonium in them, right?
Well, not plutonium, uranium.
Uranium. So
and, of course, the
depleted uranium.
Well, the great problem with this is we call it depleted uranium, but do you know what depleted uranium is?
All I know is it lasts 500,000 years.
No, about 4 billion years. You're too conservative. But basically, if we call it depleted uranium, actually, it's just solid uranium. Now, with the depleted, they've actually taken out about 1% of the uranium, and that's the uranium-235, which, of course, is the most radioactive, and, of course, which you can make fuel rods from, and you can make atom bombs, and then we find that in plutonium. But the other is just simply radioactive uranium, predominantly uranium-238, although some of the 235 is still in there. But it has an advantage from a military point of view. It, of course, is very, very hard. It's much harder than steel, and it'll go right through steel. In fact, when you fire it, it gets on fire, so it'll burn right through the tank, kill everybody inside, and, of course, it will go into a hardened bunker. There's just nothing it won't go through. They use it in bombs. They use it on missiles. They use it on bullets, 50-caliber bullets. But unfortunately, when it burns, why, it leaves a uranium oxide, and that you can inhale that, you get into your lungs, it gets into your bones, it destroys your body. And, of course, if you've never heard my interviews with Major Rocky, who was actually the military officer in charge of cleaning up the vehicles that American vehicles that had been hit by our own weapons, actually friendly fire. I think there were probably maybe 30 or 40 vehicles. Some of them were armored personnel. Others were tanks. And he was assigned, given 100 men to clean these up so they could be used again. Well, they worked with him for a long time. And, of course, there's no way you could clean these up. They would always be contaminated. And I think they were buried. I'm not sure exactly what happened to them. But of the 100 men, my understanding is at least 30 of them are already dead.
Oh, my goodness.
And he is seriously ill. And this is what we're doing. This is a mass form of genocide. We are using radioactive weapons over there, and we're going to kill off most of those people, you know, in 20 years from now.
Well, I mean, I don't understand what, you know, we think we're doing over there. You know, I mean, it's...
Well, if you want...
It seems like mass corporate killing to me. I mean... These people call themselves Christians in the White House? I mean, what part of violence begets violence and thou shalt not kill don't they understand?
I think that they do understand, but just because somebody says that they're a Christian doesn't mean they're a Christian.
Well, that's true.
And I mean, this is certainly not...
buffalo the American people into thinking
that. Well, listen, I will tell you, I don't know if you ever heard me tell the story, but I was with a group of Christians that picked George Bush to run for the presidency. They call him the College of Cardinals. Don't ask what I was doing there, but I will tell you that there were only about two of us who attended those meetings who were not taken in. The rest of them were taken in. And really frightening that these are good people, really sincere Christians, but they felt, gee, he's going to win, and he professes to be a Christian, and he sat there and he said, you know, Billy Graham led me to the Lord, and I'm a born-again Christian. He knew all the right answers. He could talk in Christianese, but I don't think it's accept a person by what they say. I think it's by what they do.
And yeah, leading us into this war,
go ahead, leading us into this war in Iraq is a terrible, terrible thing to have done, because they're not telling us the truth. We went into Iraq very simply because it would be the easiest of the countries over there to take control of, and then we could then use it as a base for our plans.
And a gas station.
It's more than that. We are going to take out Syria, we're going to take out Iran, and probably going to take out Saudi Arabia. We're going to dominate that whole area.
You heard how lately Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney have all been on television saying, we underestimated the insurgency or the perseverance of the insurgency. Like that's some kind of justifiable excuse for what we're doing over there now. You know, I mean, it's like, that's their new, like, saying, you know, it's like, yeah, well the reason things are bad over there is because we underestimated the insurgency. Well, it's like, you know, it's really an admission of just such a horrible failure of catastrophic proportions, you know. I don't know. I don't just get how the American people can sit there and watch this junk on TV night after night and just not get outraged by it. I thank God for this radio station we have here in Austin with you and, you know, Jack Blood and all these guys on there, because... You guys are the only place I can go to get some reality, you know. The rest of it's just so full of bunk. It just confuses me to how the American people are duped by this. You know, I mean, I'm not that intelligent of a human being, but it's easy for me to see through this.
I'll tell you what, I'm a little older than you are, Randy, and I can remember during the early years of the Vietnam War, I supported the war until I began to realize we weren't trying to win the war. We weren't there for the reasons we were being told. We were told we were there fighting communism. We were told if we did not stop the communists in Vietnam, then it would be Laos, and then it would be Cambodia, and then it would be Malaysia and Australia, and then New Zealand, and then San Francisco. Well, if they got San Francisco, that might not be too bad a thing, but the great tragedy is we were buffaloed, and it took me a couple of years to get smart enough to realize we weren't over in Vietnam fighting communism. We were there for reasons that they could never tell the American people. And the Gulf of Tonkin was a lie, and they knew it was a lie.
Right.
But they could not admit that.
Now, my father was in Vietnam, you know, and I was in the lottery, you know, the draft lottery.
Right.
And fortunately, my number came up just barely over. I didn't have to go, but I mean, you know, when you're faced with having to go fight a war, like when the draft is in place, I mean, you start checking it out. And if it happened now, I guarantee you a lot of these, you know, yuppies kids that are out there not really paying any attention to it would suddenly open their eyes big time.
Well, I would hope that a lot of parents here in America would stop and think of this. You know, it's great. The initial victory in Afghanistan was wonderful. We killed 31,000 Taliban and Al-Qaeda. We only lost about 4 or 5 men ourselves. Wasn't that a great victory?
The yeah,
trouble was
well,
that these were all human beings and they weren't our enemy. The Taliban, and if you read the report, staff report of the 911 Commission, and that's not the foolish report that they published, but it's the one that's up on the internet, the staff statements, statement 16, page 19, you'll find that the Taliban did not want bin Laden to attack America. And that most of the leaders of Al-Qaeda did not want bin Laden to attack America, at least according to their report and the information that they were able to put together. So then why did we go over and kill them all? They weren't our enemies, at least they weren't until we slaughtered them and treated them so badly and tortured them. And believe me, there was torture going on in Afghanistan. I mean, over 30...
Did you hear about the trailers? When the Northern Alliance started moving through, they just packed like these guys by the hundreds into these trailers where they couldn't even sit down. And then they closed the doors and just let the heat get them, and they just died this horrible, miserable death. I mean, there were thousands of people exterminated like that.
Well, at least hundreds of them. It's, war is a terrible thing. I don't think that the average American really understands war. I mean, it's one thing when you see it on television. It's another thing when it's your son or daughter are going to go, and they're going to renew the draft. The legislation's already in place in Washington, D.C. They just can't tell the American people until after the election.
Doctor, when you hear the term being used in the mass media that they say, well, over 10,000 of Iraqi civilians have been killed. Well, that term, when they say that over 10,000 civilians have been killed in this war effort, that doesn't include, and correct me if I'm wrong, the number of soldiers, Iraqi soldiers that they killed. Am I correct?
I really can't tell you, but I suspect there's a lot more than 10,000 people on the other side have been killed.
Well, and they're dropping 20,000-pound bombs on people. I mean,
Randy, it's more than the people who've been killed. It is the fact that many of them are going to die of the depleted uranium poisoning because this permeates everything. Everything is covered with this uranium dust, and our boys are coming home. They talk about the 1,000 that have died. They talk about 5,000 who've been wounded, but they don't tell you that their last thing I saw, there were over 13,000, this was probably 2 months ago, 13,000 casualties, American casualties. Now, what were these? Well, only maybe 5,000 were wounded. The rest of them had these bizarre diseases, and sort of like the Gulf War illness, and I believe much of this is depleted uranium, but you see, it's already sort of a massive experiment. It's all experimenting to see what works. And but what a better way to kill off large numbers of people than to contaminate them with a radioactive material that'll be there for 4 billion years. And the fact you're not reading about this, if you go to Europe, you'll read this in the newspapers all the time. You open the internet and even look under the Royal Society, the British Royal Society, and they're concerned about depleted uranium. And here in the United States, we're told, oh, that's just all talk. Those are the people who believe in black helicopters.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean about Europe. I'm a musician, and since 9/11 happened, I've spent 5 months in the Nordic countries, you know, over the last 3 years. And in Norway, for example, the people there, I mean, you know, I was playing in clubs for 6 nights out of the week. And when you're in one, like I was in Oslo for a month playing in one club for 6 nights out of the week, and you meet a lot of people. And let me tell you, everybody I talked to there, they were so against the Americans, and they were really against their government because the government had, the Queen had signed on with the Americans. She wasn't actually sending troops over there, but she had signed on like part of this, like, you know, coalition of the billing or something, you know, and the people were just irate at their own government for like even saluting and going along with the Americans because 99% of the people over there in Norway are totally against this American effort. And I spent a month in Switzerland, right outside of Zurich, in a little town called San Moritz, which is up in the Alps.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I was there for a month and talked to all kinds of people, you know, and they just are totally against it. I spent several months in Denmark, and it's the same way there. You know, I mean, those people there are so in tune. I mean, you know, they portray Bush on the front page of the paper as a, you know, a chimpanzee with a leash in his hand, and to the end of the leash is a poodle, and that's Tony Blair, you know. the cartoon characters. That's on the front page of the paper. You know, I mean, Americans don't really have a clue to what the perception of the of our behavior is in the rest of the world.
But I see, Randy, where we miss what this is all about. Behind everything that's going on politically are the spiritual forces. And if you listen to my programs regularly, you realize, of course, that there are spiritual forces that are drawing us into this war, and the war is not going to end. Our boys are not coming home in a year or 2 years. They're going to be there indefinitely, because we are going to take out Iran, and all you need to do is read the material being put out by the members of the Project for the New American Century, people like Frank Gaffney and Gary Bauer. Gary Bauer is one of our great Christian leaders, William Bennett, and they're all talking, pushing us towards this idea of a war. We're going to have to go to war with Iran, because Iran's threatening to attack Israel and maybe even attack the United States. Oh, we've got to go after Iran. Well, Iran is a terrorist nation, but everybody's forgotten who brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power and the Ayatollahs to power. Our CIA back in 1979, I can remember 1979, wondering why would we topple the Shah of Iran and bring to power these radical Islamic leaders who hate America. And in 1979, it didn't make any sense.
Well, it's really crazy. In 1952, we're the ones that put the Shah in power.
You're absolutely right, when we toppled Mossadegh. So maybe what we ought to do is cut off all the funds to the federal government.
That's a great idea.
And, of course, have us stop interfering in other countries.
Quit meddling in other people's business.
Right. We hang on here. We're just going to have to take a quick break, and then I'll give you a chance to sort of wrap up your thoughts.
All right.
And this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and open lines this evening. Our regularly scheduled guest probably was waylaid there, but we're looking forward to having him on sometime real soon. Certainly one of my favorite guests, Dr. Garth Nicholson. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest right now, we have Randy on from Austin, Texas, and of course, we've apparently one or two stations down there carrying our programs, and we're certainly grateful for that. Well, Randy, did you have some parting thoughts? We got about 3 minutes before we have to go.
Well, I just wanted to say once again how much I appreciate the effort that all you people are doing on the Freedom Radio and the Genesis Network and all that. I mean, it's really great. Tomorrow they're having a huge anti-war rally here in Austin, and people are going to ride their bikes down to some of these corporations that are, you know, supporting the war, and we're going to raise hell. I know it's probably not going to do any good, and it won't make the news, but it just makes me feel better.
I know it does, but the thing is, what you have to understand is the spiritual forces behind that. Have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness? If you happen to get it, you need to get it. It's not that expensive. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. It'll give you an overview. And everybody's looking who's really behind what's going on. And some people will tell you it's the communists, and some people tell you it's the socialists, or the humanists, or the Masons, or the Council on Foreign Relations, or the Skull and Bone Society. Well, I suggest you get hold of my book and really understand what this is all about. But America is being drawn into World War III. And if the American people think that we're going to escape this, you know, without seeing our cities in rubble, I think that they're sadly mistaken. Because I believe not only, of course, are the political things going on, but I believe God is going to bring his retribution on this country. There's no instance in all history where a nation has turned its back on God, and God has not eventually simply brought his wrath on that nation. And I often remember those words of Thomas Jefferson, who supposedly talked about the wall of separation between church and state. But if you go to Washington, D.C., and you go to the Jefferson Memorial, which is the most beautiful building in Washington, D.C., you'll see that then it's graved in marble, God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever. And as we see the coming World War III, I think we have to remember those words. I think Jefferson foresaw the future of this country. And I think he was saddened by what he saw, because he realized that this country was turning against God even then. And we would feel his wrath. Hey, thanks so very much for calling, Randy. I hope you become a regular listener there. Please tell other people about our programs.
I sure will. All right, thanks very much.
Good night. And well, this is Dr. Stan. I sometimes enjoy the open line programs. Have no idea what we're going to talk about, but we always get through the hour. We've never started an out radio program that we haven't finished, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap this one up. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners all across America and across the world that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to helping us do what we do. 5 hours every day by radio, 5 hours every day on the Internet, and you can listen to our programs on three networks, the American Freedom Network, the Genesis Network, and Radio Liberty Network. And then, of course, 4 hours on shortwave, and, of course, there in the central time, the program is from 5 to 7 in the evening on 9.430 megahertz, and then from 10 to 12, and this is central time, of course, on 7.315 or 7.515 megahertz. And, well, we're just privileged to have an opportunity to get our message out across America. But it's an expensive proposition, so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and help us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our July newsletter tells you what really happened on September 11th, 3 years ago. Our August newsletter tells you what Warren Buffett and Alan Greenspan really think about what's happening to our economy and of course, where we're headed. And if you don't understand what's happening financially and you read or you believe what you read in the newspapers, then you're going to end up just like the people of Argentina, where over half the population of Argentina today live below the poverty level. At one time, they had a powerful middle class. Today, they have a very wealthy class and then a massive poor class. And, of course, I believe everything going on today is aimed at wiping out the middle class and creating an authoritarian society, a ruling elite, a massive military that will be watching what everybody does. Oh, of course, in the name of fighting that wicked Osama bin Laden, who worked for the CIA for so many years, and al-Zawahiri, of course, we got to be against him. Bin Laden's right-hand man, of course, we allowed him to come into this country in 1995, knowing he was a terrorist, and raise funds for al-Qaeda. If you really want to know what happened, of course, you want to get my July newsletter. We really recommend Jim Marr's new book, Inside Job, Tremendous Insight into What's Going On, or The War on Freedom. We're carrying a copy of that. It's written by a British writer. We think it's an excellent book. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, look at the items that we carry, and they will help you to begin to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. So we hope that many of you will go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and, of course, you can listen to our programs there. You can listen to the archive programs. That we have newsletters there going back to the mid-1990s. You can pull them down, copy them, circulate them. Some of them are pretty, pretty good, even if I do say so. I agonize over them every month, but they usually turn out well, and they put forward ideas. And they're all certainly documented. If you want the documentation on anything we say, we'll be glad to provide it for you. And then, of course, we hope that you'll look at some of the items that we carry, whether it's the big Berkey or Berkey units or the Sanjian radios or the Robinson homeschool curriculum or things that we think that, will help people. And, of course, they help us as well. So go to our website, tell others about it, tell them about our programs, and then remember we're having that meeting here in the Monterey Bay area here, North Shore Monterey Bay, on the 6th of November. The meeting's going to be all day long. There's going to be luncheon served. We're bringing in outside speakers, and I think it's going to be an unforgettable experience. One of the speakers is going to be Joe Schimmel, and, of course, we carry his video, either the 4-hour or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The story of the music industry and, of course, the satanic influence in certain of these organizations. And certainly you'll hear Marilyn Manson talking, singing about Mr. Crowley, and you'll hear Ozzy Osbourne singing about Mr. Crowley. You will see pictures of Mr. Crowley on the front cover of the Beatles albums. Of course, most of you don't even know who Mr. Crowley is. You listen, you will. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Ordinarily we have some really exciting programs. We had two of the best programs this afternoon. From 3 to 4, we talked to Peter Lance, who's a former columnist, award-winning TV producer, and writer for many of our major periodicals, who've done a wonderful book called A Thousand Years for Revenge, and hey, has a brand new book out called Cover Up. And then, of course, the next program was with Jeffrey Smith, and we talked about the seeds of deception, genetic engineering, and, of course, really how they're poisoning the American people with genetic engineering, and this is one of the greatest cover-ups. In Europe, they won't allow these genetically produced foods to be distributed. Here in the United States, why, of course, they're not even doing any scientific studies to prove that they're safe. They're simply using us for a massive experiment. And, of course, along with this experiment is a rising incidence of allergies, specifically to soy products. Why? Because over 80% of the soy in this country is genetically engineered, as is corn, and, in fact, they are into every aspect of it. And the trouble is that the scientific studies on genetically engineered food are really frightening, and you're not reading about them because of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, we're going to have with us now, here on the line, Arthur Bernclau, who is just back from Vietnam, where he's been getting some treatments over there. But I want to talk about what's really going on in Vietnam today, because I think that this is a tragic, tragic nation. Well, the Americans lost 58,000 men there. There's probably 1,000 men that are still alive in Laos, and maybe they've been taken off to North Korea, shipped to Russia. Our government knows that. They've simply abandoned them. The evil and wicked people like Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon and subsequent presidents have known what was going on. John Kerry and John McCain, both senators, did everything they could to cover up the fact that those men were lost. And John Kerry is one of the most disreputable people, but one of the most dishonorable things he did was when he led the committee that investigated what happened to the POWs in Vietnam. and then ordered many of the documents shredded, which was, of course, illegal. But the last thing he wanted for the American people to find out that we abandoned about 2,000 men in Vietnam and in Laos. Not one of the people who were captured in Laos has ever come home. That didn't happen by accident. Well, the country there was in shambles after the war. 1,000 million people died in South Vietnam. 2 million died in North Vietnam. These are gentle people. I mean, they're not bad people involved in a war, but the war brings out the worst possible element in every human being. And yet, we are entering wars. Why are we entering another war? We lost in Vietnam. And we are going to lose, tragically, over in the Middle East. In fact, the president recently admitted we're not going to win the war on terrorism. So if we're not going to win it, why don't we stop the war on terrorism? And as al-Zawahiri, bin Laden's right-hand man, said, this will continue until America stops interfering with the countries here, the Islamic countries. Well, Arthur, tell us, how are things over there in Vietnam?
Very, very tragic what we've done to those people, Dr. Stan. It's very tragic. The devastation that we've caused with the Agent Orange and other dioxins.
Hold that thought in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to Arthur Bernclough, and Arthur's commenting that the Agent Orange, which a government lied to us and said was perfectly safe, there was nothing to worry about. Same people are telling us that genetically engineered foods are perfectly safe or vaccines are perfectly safe. Tell us, you know, Arthur, what you found when you were over there.
Okay.
Do you have your radio on by any chance, because we're almost getting an echo?
I don't think so. Let me just check a moment, okay? I don't think there is. Hold on a moment.
Okay, go ahead. Well, anyway, of course, Arthur is just back from Vietnam this last week. And he, of course, had an opportunity when he was there to visit a community where the victims of Agent Orange are there, and where, of course, they're being helped. But you know, what we did, we used this massive doses of dioxin, no low-dose dioxin may not produce a problem, but the massive doses that we did use have created, I think, some terrible, terrible problems. And in Vietnam, many of our young men have come back.
You were right, Dr. Stan. It was the other end of the house, but there was something on. It was a ball game on.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Part of the reason that our group journeyed to Vietnam was to receive medical treatment at the National Institute of Acupuncture in Hanoi, which is the North Vietnam, and we heard it was the best in the world, and we weren't disappointed. Their skills and the traditions of acupuncture date back centuries to the era of Lan Ong, who not only possessed vast medical knowledge, but Lan Ong was a humanitarian who believed the practice of medicine should not be limited to only those who could afford it. And that tradition, it explains how, in spite of our of our war here, anti-American sentiment really doesn't exist in Vietnam. And Hanoi is a wonderful city with incredibly friendly people, and I truly think it's the Pearl of the Orient. It's a beautiful place. And I was quite surprised myself, because all during the war, they kept telling us, our government kept telling us, the enemy is up in Hanoi. The enemy is up in Hanoi, when all the time the enemy was in Washington, D.C.
And who was financing Hanoi? Who was keeping them? Where did they get the MiG planes? Where did they get the anti-aircraft things? Where did they get the weapons? They got them from Russia. Russia was, you know, it's a basket case. They didn't have
the
money to get. We funded Russia all the time so that they could fund the North Vietnamese, so they could keep the war going. But the American people just don't understand that.
Exactly. We funded Russia so Russia could fund the Vietnamese, and they kept the war going. It's incredible.
But, of course, we changed America during that time, and that's what it was all about. It was a great diversion, and what a terrible tragedy. If we'd been fighting communism, it would have been one thing, but then we've never really fought communism because we financed it from its inception. Well, go ahead, pick up the story, Arthur. They don't want to hear me. They want to hear your story of what happened when you were over there, and there really are an awful lot of people suffering from the Agent Orange.
Well, I will get, I'll get into that with you on there. A few of us who went there were veterans. There was a few Vietnam veterans there with our group. We went with a whole tour group, and the tour group came back to the United States on the 20th, and I stayed up till the end of the month. I was the only one from the group who stayed past the 20th. I was there till the end of the month. And one of the people who was with us is James Rhodes. He's a columnist down in Alabama for a couple of newspapers, and James Rhodes was treated for the residuals of dioxin poisoning, Agent Orange, that he had received while during a doing a tour of combat during a war. And he had grown 14 tumors in his body as a result of this horrible poisoning, and he is still suffering from enormously fluctuating blood pressure, both high and low, and headaches, which are symptomatic of dioxin poisoning. And he was taking intensive treatment for the headaches and the high and low blood pressure. And the amazing part is, since he's been going there, this is his fifth visit to Vietnam, the tumors have disappeared. And I can't find a logical reason why these tumors have disappeared, but these tumors have disappeared since he's been going for acupuncture. Now, he was told that he's not going to survive, that he's going to die. He was told this by the Veterans Hospital and by other hospitals here in the United States. And he started going to Vietnam for acupuncture and also for Native American sweat baths in the United States with the Indians. And since he's been taking those two treatments, the tumors have actually disappeared, and he is not considered terminal anymore.
Well, Arthur, but what were the tumors? You know, were they cancers, and what sort of cancer were they? Do you have any idea?
No, they were non-malignant tumors.
All right, so they were non-malignant tumors. So anyway,
no, they were not malignant.
All right. So anyway, of course, he's much better, and the acupuncture has helped him, and I understand it's helped you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm going to get into that in a couple of moments on there. Now, as for myself, I haven't been able to walk normally on my left leg since April 25th, 1995. And that was after undergoing triple bypass heart surgery and having the nerves in my left leg severed by a physician's assistant doing the graft. And I'd like to make a note that this procedure should be done only by a vascular surgeon, but the hospital where I had the heart surgery was saving money, as many hospitals do, by eliminating the surgeon's fee and giving the job to somebody who was inept. Now, I've had to use a cane for the past 4 years, and the condition of the leg had been getting worse by the day. Now, I took 21 days of intensive acupuncture each and every day, and that was recommended by my acupuncturist in New York City. Well, not in New York City, but in the Stony Brook Holistic Center, to be done by world-renowned Professor Thu, that's T-H-U, and Dr. Thin, T-H-I-N-H, at the National Institute of Acupuncture in Hanoi. Originally, I was going to go to Hong Kong to have it done, as my acupuncturist had suggested it. However, when I heard about Dr. Thu, I said, this is where I'm going to go, and I discussed this with my acupuncturist, and as soon as I mentioned Dr. Thu, he says, oh yes, I know who that is. This is the place you go to. And after the completion of the treatments, I no longer have to use my cane for walking, but only to climb stairs. And I would say that's a miracle of Eastern medicine. At the end of September, however, I'm going to have a total knee replacement done by my orthopedic surgeon here in New York on that left leg, and thereby I'll be combining Eastern medicine with Western medicine to, I hope, complete the picture. And if I'm lucky, I won't have to use that cane anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chris, the total joint replacement really are. These are amazing techniques of engineering. So what about the agents, people, the victims of Agent Orange over there? Because we've had so many people here in America, the government, Denied, 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 denied. And then finally they said, well, yes, it really is true. In fact, of all people, it was under Bill Clinton. And they actually accepted many of the veterans that put in claims for Agent Orange 20 years before, and they are at least getting some compensation for their chronic disability.
Well, Dr. Stan, as Americans, we're very sad that 58,000 of our people actually had to lay down their lives on Vietnamese soil, and we're equally sad that over 2 million Vietnamese civilians and military lost their lives during the same time period. Now, before we made this trip, we were advised by people who were obviously uninformed that when entering any Vietnamese place of business, Americans should not make eye contact with any Vietnamese, as most Vietnamese had lost somebody dear to them and would look for any opportunity to get even with Americans. Now, when I heard this, visions of the gunfight at the OK Corral popped into my head. And I was very much relieved to see that this was only a myth, because in Vietnam, Americans are not hated or even disliked, and considering what was done here during the war, with Agent Orange and the horrors of what it had done to the people there, especially the kids, considering what was done, this is truly remarkable that the hospitality that the Vietnamese people have shown us, I mean, this is unsurpassed in all my travels and memory. I've never been treated so well in my life as I was in Vietnam.
Well, tell me, what about the residual? What sort of residual do the children have? Because they obviously didn't come in contact with Agent Orange, but they're the victims of what, of genetic changes?
Genetic changes, and this is the third generation. Now, since we started dropping the Agent Orange on them, this is the third generation, and the mutations that have suffered in the birth mutations, and distorted bodies and distorted minds, and I visited a group called Friendship Village out there, which is actually run by people from many countries. And there's quite a few Vietnam veterans from the United States who have volunteered to go down there and work with these children, just teaching them how to feed themselves and how to grow their own crops and grow their own food. But just teaching them how to feed themselves and to dress themselves, it's quite an ordeal. The devastation that these kids have suffered.
Arthur, do they have mental defects, or
yes,
what sort of problems do they have?
Many of them have mental defects and cannot function mentally. They cannot think.
Well, how do we know that this is actually Agent Orange and not just simply, because there are always some children who are born who really are quite inadequate?
Well, we know by the vast numbers of them that it can't be anything else other than that. It can't be anything else other than that by the vast numbers of them. It's a disproportionate amount of all the children being born in Vietnam now who are coming up with these physical and mental defects. And it's really tragic to watch some of this.
Now, what sort of physical defects do they have?
Physical defects, a lot of them are born with missing appendages, missing hands, feet, fingers. A lot of them are born blind. Many of them are born without being able to hear.
Do we have any idea what the relationship is of that to the general population, so that we could, you know, really appraise, you know, the relationship to Agent Orange? Is there any scientific studies that can definitely say that it is Agent Orange related? You know, I mean, it may very well be.
They have scientific studies over there proving that it was Agent Orange.
Okay, so the Vietnamese physicians then have checked this out, and
oh,
they
certainly
believe it's Agent Orange.
Certainly.
And, of course, the Vietnamese believe this is a direct product, a byproduct of the fact that we were dropping these poisons on their forests and on their fields.
It came from nowhere else.
Okay. And, of course, just as today in Iraq, while we are using depleted uranium, and, of course, that will be there for 4 billion years. There's no way you can clean it up.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever. And, of course, the dust from this, the uranium oxide, gets into the body. And even many of our young men who are coming home are chronically ill and are actually contaminated with depleted uranium. But they have to play this down. They cannot let the American people know that you may come home from Vietnam. You may not be wounded, you may not be maimed, but you will carry that admitted and will carry that depleted uranium to their death.
You know, we don't know the devastation yet that this depleted uranium is going to cause, because this is rather new. We haven't been there that long, but this is going to show up over the next few decades, and there's going to be a disproportionate amount of people here who served over there in Iraq coming down with cancer, leukemia, and birth defects. We're already having some birth defects.
Well, I think this is a great, great tragedy, and the fact that the government is saying there's nothing to worry about, and they know there is, and those of you out there listening audience who haven't heard my interviews with Major Rocky or some of the other experts on this, Dr. Turakovich, who's with the Veterans Administration, need to get the information, you need to check it out, you need to find if it's true, and for that reason and that reason alone, why we should end this war immediately. We'll be back here in just a moment with Arthur Bernclough. We're talking about what's going on in Vietnam now. We left 30 years ago. So, of course, one of the great defeats of America, but it was war we never tried to win. If you understand we never tried to win, it could have been won in 2 months. That's what the ambassador told me, William H. Sullivan. That's what the General Lew Wolf, who headed I Corps, told me. We could have won at any time, but you see, Washington, D.C. really didn't want to win that war. It was a great distraction as America changed forever. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening, Arthur Bernclough, just back from North Vietnam, just back from Hanoi. And tell us now, you were well treated there. Of course, your acupuncture treatment was successful. Did you ever feel that you were in any danger when you were there?
Yes, I did feel I was in some danger, but the danger was not from the Vietnamese people or the Vietnamese government. In fact, we were interviewed by five different newspapers and on radio stations. I've got a bunch of newspapers. I haven't had it interpreted yet. They've got my picture in there, and they've got me looking like Boris Yeltsin, who was another drunk. And there's some terrible pictures of me looking like Boris Yeltsin. And when I get together with you, I'll bring those newspapers with me out to California. I think you'll get a couple of good laughs out of them.
Well, of course, you were sort of a celebrity, and this group of Americans who were coming there were sort of celebrities.
Yeah, they had all of us over there, and they were interviewing us. And the only really sour note that happened during the trip, it did not happen in Vietnam. It happened at the Los Angeles airport. We were not allowed to watch while our luggage was being examined by the thugs in Homeland Security. Therefore, I didn't notice until we arrived in Hanoi at the hotel that my disposable acupuncture needles, which I took with me because of sterile procedures being almost non-existent there in Southeast Asia, I did not want to have disposable acupuncture needles used, sterilizable acupuncture needles used on me, so I took along 1,000 disposable acupuncture needles for myself and some of the other veterans. And they were stolen out of my luggage, along with a list of contacts I had, names, addresses, telephone and fax numbers, and other valuable documents were no longer in my luggage. Now, of course, I'm filing a claim for this, and in a foreign country, claims are like impossible. I personally know through contacts in both the United States and Vietnam that certain bureaucrats at the Veterans Administration were most concerned about our trip to Hanoi, and it's no coincidence that our trip began on such a harassing and disturbing note. Now, several people from our group were missing items from their luggage. I wasn't the only one. There were three others missing items from their luggage. And prior to leaving for Vietnam, the Veterans Administration bureaucrats had contacted Vietnamese officials stating that there are two American veterans in this group that you could do us a favor and lose. Mr. James Rhodes of Alabama and Arthur Bernclough of New York, these are two Americans that we don't want back. And that's actually what they said to the people over at the Vietnam embassy. And the Vietnam Embassy knows what a bunch of liars they are because they contacted us and said, what kind of trouble are you having with your government? They told us that these are two Americans we don't want back. Now, until we arrived, what we didn't know until we arrived in Hanoi was that this third generation of Vietnamese herbicidal poison victims had filed legal briefs in New York seeking medical relief and compensation for their condition. And these briefs are against the chemical manufacturers who supplied Agent Orange and the other dioxin. They're against Dow, Diamond Shamrock, Monsanto, and about 25 other companies.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclau, who, of course, works with veterans trying to get them through the maze at the Veterans Administration. Of course, the Veterans Administration officials are paid large sums of money to deny veterans their legal rights. And, of course, Arthur's there to try to, of course, defend them and make sure that they're taken care of. So he does this as a labor of love. He's not paid for it. And we'll, in a little later, we'll tell you how to get in touch with Arthur. He's doing a great job representing our veterans. Well, anyway, of course, those of you who've studied Agent Orange know that many of our people, many of our personnel, I think it was Admiral Zumwalt's son, actually came down with a chronic lymphoma and died of this. And Admiral Zumwalt and his son wrote extensively about the dangers of dioxin. And eventually, why, despite the fact that the government consistently said there's nothing to worry about, it's all lies, it's all hysteria, there were suits brought by the veterans, and there was a settlement on that suit, wasn't there, by the various companies?
Oh, yes. There was a settlement, all right. The first case, the case was tried in the Second Circuit East, Judge Weinstein's court. That was in Cadman Plaza in Brooklyn. And there was a settlement made, I think, something like $500 million or something, which was a pittance next to what they were supposed to be seeking. Now, in that first case, with the veterans case, the attorneys made out like bandits. The attorneys made millions of dollars, but the veterans were paid pennies.
Well, of course, they actually knocked the settlement way down, didn't they?
Oh, terrible.
What was the eventual settlement, you know?
I think the eventual settlement was about $500 million.
Okay.
They were seeking a lot more than that. But the eventual settlement was about $500 million.
All right. Now, how many veterans were involved?
I think we're going back to something like about 40,000 veterans or something to that effect.
Well, there was a fair number of veterans anyway that were involved in this, and of course there was a settlement, but the American people were never told this. I mean, the American people are told, this is all hysteria, Agent Orange is perfectly safe.
Agent Orange doesn't exist, we were told.
Right, and there's nothing to worry about, and yet of course many of the people now are getting a permanent pension, but it took them 20 years to get that because the government lied. Why should we believe anything they say today?
Dr. Stan, as a veteran, we've learned to accept the fact that when it comes to the government, one lies and the other swears to it. And this is the way the government works. And I'll tell you, the cases that we saw, and really sad cases, especially the kids, the devastation that was caused by these dioxin poisoning, you know, our heart has to go out to these unfortunate people, especially these little kids who're innocent. We sprayed indiscriminately. We did not hit military targets only. We hit everything that we could. We sprayed indiscriminately. And the Vietnamese government is not capable of taking care of all their special needs, and therefore we need organizations and individuals, and there's quite a few of them from the United States who have relocated and are living in Vietnam to try to help these people.
Now, these are Vietnam veterans?
Most of them are Vietnam veterans.
How many do you think are over there now?
I'd say we've got maybe about 700-800 American veterans who are over there trying to help.
Well, I think that's a very wonderful and noble thing to do.
Well, I met and I became very friendly with two of them. One fellow, Sewell Jones, who is a Vietnam veteran, and another gentleman, John Burlow. He's a Harvard Law graduate who is the director of Friendship Village's Southeast Asian Organics Project, and they're teaching these youngsters how to grow their own food to feed themselves. And it's a wonderful project. I'm trying to get back. I'm seeing if I can get some time off from Veterans for Constitutional Law. I told them I'll need 2 months next year, September and October. So far that they're conceding me 3 weeks, but I'm going to try to get a full 2 months if I can to work with Friendship Village. I want to get back there and help and do whatever I can.
Now, you see that they are actually then trying to bring a suit here in the United States as a result of this.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with Arthur Bernthal, who's just back from Vietnam, and of course the victims of the Agent Orange spraying. And people say, well, you know, we were in war, we had to do this sort of thing. Well, we were not at war. We were financing the North Vietnamese all during Vietnam. And if you doubt that, you need to get my interview with Professor Sutton, used to be at the Hoover Institute, until he testified before the Republican National Convention in 1972 about how we were financing the North Vietnamese. Went back to Hoover Institute, they took his name off the door, he no longer had a telephone, and they got rid of him. But his book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, and my interview with him. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernthal. And, of course, we're talking about how we finance the North Vietnamese. I mean, if you stop and think of it, ladies and gentlemen, do you honestly think that the mightiest nation in the world, the United States, could fight a 10-year war with a nation the size of the state of Mississippi and lose the war unintentionally? Of course,
the whole thing was ridiculous.
Of course, and it wasn't just as ridiculous as so much what's going on over in Iraq today. But for our listeners out there, let me just simply suggest that you consider getting my interview with Professor Sutton. It's entitled The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. And, of course, the book which he wrote, which includes his testimony before the Senate, before the Republican National Convention in 1972. The idea that we would finance our enemies just seems so incredible to the average American, but why should it be? I mean, if you go back and you study the financing of communism from 1918 on, so much of it came from the United States and from Western Europe, because the leaders there, as well as our own leaders, needed an enemy to rally the people behind them, and that's exactly what happened. So, Arthur, tell us then your experience and what's going to happen as far as this lawsuit is concerned, this effort to get compensation for the victims of the government program of spraying poison over the people of Vietnam, both North and South Vietnam.
Okay, what is going to happen and what I hope is going to happen, what I hope is really going to happen is that these people are going to send their own attorneys to work with the American attorneys that they've hired and not let their case get out of control like the veterans did. The veterans let their case get out of their control into the hands of these lawyers, and these lawyers made out like bandits. And the veterans were paid off a pittance for their, one fellow who was absolutely terminal, I think, got a settlement of about $2,400. It was ridiculous the way they paid the veterans on that last lawsuit. And I've advised these people who have put this lawsuit together, no matter how good the high-powered law firm is that you've hired to handle the case, you send several of your own attorneys over there to work with them, and do not lose control of your own case, because if they lose control of their own case, the same thing is going to happen to them that happened to us. The lawyers are going to make the money. The Vietnamese people are not. And I discussed this quite extensively with people from their government and quite extensively with people from their newspapers and radio stations, and I hope I've made an impact there. I believe I did. I think I did make an impact there.
Hold that thought, Arthur. We'll be back with you in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Arthur Bernclough, and he's telling us that people, the Vietnamese government, are bringing a lawsuit against the United States, against Monsanto and the Dow Chemical and the other countries that created the dioxin that was used over there, that was sprayed so extensively. And do they spray both North and South Vietnam?
North and South. The entire country was sprayed. And the lawsuit now is being brought against the chemical companies, but there will be a second lawsuit brought against the United States government.
But, of course, the chances of getting a suit against the United States government are pretty slim, because they can say, we won't allow ourselves to be sued in our own courts. So the only way they could do it then would be to an international court.
I would say that would be their best bet, is through the international court, even though the United States government does not recognize the international court. So I would say that would be the best bet, but there will be a second lawsuit against the United States government for this, depending on what happens on this lawsuit now. There's definitely going to be a second lawsuit there, and without question, Jim Rhodes and I and the other veterans support the Vietnamese victims of herbicidal poisoning, and we also felt a duty and an obligation to inform the Vietnamese of the treachery of the Veterans Administration and the United States government when dealing with American veterans affected by Agent Orange. And as if we had a crystal ball, this deceit continued. As soon as the Vietnamese victims of herbicidal poisons filed their petition, the United States government passed a resolution condemning Vietnam for alleged human rights violations. Now, guess which of these actions have received United States press coverage? Three guesses. Anyway, worse yet, the United States government has threatened to cut off humanitarian aid to Vietnam, and this we're confident, it's an action meant to punish the Vietnamese for their herbicidal poisons legal action against the chemical companies. Our government is trying to protect the chemical companies. Now, that's a protection given to them by our business-oriented current administration. And is it not ironic that we claim to be a Christian nation? Partisan politics have replaced our humanity. Meanwhile, the visions we have of the amputees, deformed, and severely disabled children. It fills my head with sorrow just thinking about this. And these innocent victims, they need our help. And, you know, people that want to send in money to Friendship Village, they can use all that they can get. But for people who can't afford money, they'll take books, they'll take toys, they'll take anything we can send them. They do need help there. And these people at Friendship Village are doing a magnificent job.
How many children are there?
About 400.
About 400, okay.
Yeah. And the biggest surprise that I received while I was there was the diagnosis from Professor Thu and Dr. Thin. And this is an amazing thing, that my leg impairment, not being able to walk on my left leg and no feeling at all on my left leg, was due to an underlying cause of a military back injury consisting of two compression fractures, three herniated discs, and a severe second-degree spondylolisthesis, of which I'm service-connected for 100% disability anyway. Now, what they told me is, even if the nerves in my left leg were never severed and I had never gone through the operation, I might have developed a leg impairment anyway. They said the severing of the nerves precipitated this, but the underlying cause was the back injury. And I might have developed that leg impairment anyway. And we traveled all through Vietnam. We went to the Ha Long Bay area, which is their resort area, beautiful area. And Vietnam has many temples and shrines. And we visited and we prayed at several of them. And, you know, we can only hope that great Buddha and other messengers of God will assist our humanitarian efforts, and there's going to be much more to come with this, because I'm going to be going back. I hope I'll be going back next year for 2 months. I know I'll be going back at least for 3 to 4 weeks, but I'm hoping I can get 2 months off to go back and help as much as I can.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I will appreciate that if you'd like to give a call and have a question or comment.
By the way, Dr. Stan, while I was gone, I hear our VA has been very active with some comments that they have made about us, myself and Mr. Rhodes, being big troublemakers. And they've also made some comments. Mr. Principi has asked Congress for many, many billions of dollars more for the VA budget. And Mr. Principi claims that he needs that money to fight Al-Qaeda. That Al-Qaeda threatened to bomb the VA hospitals, and my comment to him was, no, Principi, Al-Qaeda doesn't want to bomb veterans' hospitals. Why should they? Veterans' hospitals make our country look terrible. They don't want to bomb the veterans' hospitals. However, some of the veterans that are being screwed over there, they might want to bomb the hospitals, but not Al-Qaeda.
Well, let's go to Bill, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Bill. Did you have a question? Speak up just a little louder, please.
Yes. Arthur, I was wondering whether you have any knowledge on the Agent Orange chemicals that the herbicide companies are promoting here in this country to homeowners as a very safe way to eradicate those awfully toxic, unsightly dandelions and other broadleaf.
There's a lot of them, dioxins are being sold to people here to use for gardening, and some of these same dioxins are in the sprays that you're using for gardening here, and some of them are quite dangerous. I don't know which of them there is. I don't do any gardening here. In fact, our place looks like a jungle. I always say, let it grow, you know.
Okay, anything else, Bill?
Arthur was mentioning the troublemaker status of the U.S. government. However, according to the Legal Professions Law Dictionary, the United States has ceased to exist.
Okay, well, that's sort of a different subject, but thanks so much for calling, Bill, and let's get to Ed from Aptos. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Go ahead, have a question, comment.
Yeah, I have a question. I heard the term that humanitarian aid that was cut off.
Right.
What did that humanitarian aid consist of?
Now, are you speaking of humanitarian aid to who?
To Vietnam. You said that the humanitarian aid, the United States cut off the humanitarian aid.
Yeah, we have been
Vietnam.
Giving them some humanitarian aid to try to rebuild parts of Vietnam that were bombed out, and they are threatening to cut it off now that the Vietnamese people are suing the chemical companies.
So they're calling their funding, their taxpayers paying this deal to pay for the damaged buildings or whatever,
yeah.
Without humanitarian aid, when they're the ones who ruined it, that's humanitarian
aid. You bet.
My argument would be, it's like, whenever does this government ever do anything humane, or, you know, let alone anywhere around the world, let alone here? I'd like to have some examples whenever this government does anything humane.
Well, I think what you have to understand is, Ed, that they have to have a justification for giving the money to the government over there. But they're not interested in humanitarian aid, but they're interested in controlling the government. What you do is you take money from poor people in a rich country to give it to the rich people in a poor country so you can control the rich people.
And call it humanitarian aid.
And you call it, of course, you have to call it something. If you call it what it really was, Ed, the American people would rise up in their righteous indignation.
I forgot, doublespeak, I'm sorry.
Okay, anything else?
Thank you.
And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And one thing about the humanitarian aid to Vietnam, our government knows that the Vietnamese are still holding many of our prisoners over there, both in Vietnam, North Vietnam, and in Laos. The Vietnamese would love to give our people back again. Our government doesn't want them to come back because that would mean that we were lying. And so that the government had lied for the last 20 years, knowing full well that Henry Kissinger lied to the American people and said all the people had come home, that Richard Nixon had lied to the American people. And so through successive decades, why they've had a consistent cover-up. And if you've ever seen some of the material that many of the military officers tried to get the information to the American people, but you have no way of getting the information out. And we have, of course, our 4-tape set on the men we left behind, and another 4-tape set on One Man Returned, telling the story of Bobby Garvin. We intentionally abandoned those people. The reason for it was because Kissinger had promised to give the North Vietnamese $4 billion in reparations, and then they would let us pull out of the country, and they were supposed not to do anything to try to seize South Vietnam. Well, of course, no sooner had we pulled out than the North Vietnamese did take South Vietnam. And at that, then, of course, we got half of our prisoners back. And when they came back and told how they'd been tortured by the North Vietnamese and mistreated when they were in prison, why, nobody in Congress is going to vote to give the North Vietnamese $4 billion. And so they said, fine, we're going to keep the rest of your prisoners. Well, after keeping them for 20 or more years, then what are they going to do with them? And our government does not want them back again because it would be too embarrassing for the American people to realize that, of course, the government has lied. As they abandoned 8,000 boys in Korea, as they have abandoned 25,000 after the Second World War and to die in the gulag in Russia. And if you want any of this verified, we have a Senate Foreign Relations Committee report. We call it the Helms Committee report. Came out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Why, you can get that from Radio Liberty, although there is a slight charge for it, but it's a very important document. It's probably 70 or 80 pages, called the Helms Committee Report. But the media here in America has suppressed that. The last thing they want is for the American people to know that when you go in the military and you're captured by the other side, there's a good chance you'll never come home.
Dr. Stan, I can give you some of this information firsthand. I belong to the International Brotherhood of Professional Soldiers. And we brought people back from Vietnam who were on the wall as killed in action and missing in action. And most of the prisoners were moved. Almost every prisoner we had in Vietnam was moved into Laos and to Cambodia. And at last count, about 5 years ago, we still had about 200 prisoners up there. I don't know what the current count is. I don't think there is a current count. But you got to remember those people who were being held prisoners. They've been there for at least 25 years under some terrible conditions, and I don't know how many of them survived, but I can tell you probably it's got to be very few. But I'm glad in the beginning of the program you were talking about Kerry and McCain and their attitude toward prisoners and prisoners' families, and I think these two people are both absolutely despicable, Kerry and McCain. And I'm glad that you were talking about this because most people here in the United States have forgotten about Mr. Kerry's attitude toward our prisoners in, of that war, and he had a terrible attitude. And first of all, I will, getting back to our administration, I would never vote for an administration here that has done business with terrorist states, either now or in the past. Now, in my opinion, there's too much evidence that the Bush family currently is in bed with the Saudis, and now Vice President Cheney that we have now has ignored United States laws while he was the CEO of Halliburton, and profits made by Iran on the oil deals with Halliburton aids the enemy the same way profits from drug deals helps the terrorist drug lords in Afghanistan, and I see no difference. And Cheney attacked the fight against terror while he was abroad on the same day that President Bush announced plans to investigate Iran for ties to terrorism. Halliburton acknowledged that a United States grand jury issued a subpoena to the company seeking information about its Cayman Islands unit's work in Iran. and where it's illegal for United States companies to operate. Earlier this year, CBS News reported that Vice President Dick Cheney was CEO of the company, during which time Halliburton Products and Services set up shop in Iran. In fact, Cheney was so adamant about doing business with terrorist nations like Iran, he even went abroad to publicly attack American foreign policy after meeting with top officials from a foreign government. And despite economic sanctions on Iran, because of its ties to terrorists, Cheney openly bragged about Halliburton's business dealings there during the 2000 campaign. Cheney argued it was ethical for Halliburton to use independent foreign subsidiaries that exist in tax shelter countries like the Cayman Islands to skirt United States law, and he also went abroad to attack American policy, and according to the Malaysian news agency, Cheney publicly attacked United States sanctions on terrorist countries after a meeting with top Malaysian government officials in Kuala Lumpur. During the 2000 campaign, Cheney also claimed that as Halliburton CEO, I had a firm policy that we wouldn't do anything in Iraq, even arrangements that were supposedly legal. Yet earlier this year, the New Yorker magazine reported during Cheney's tenure at Halliburton, the company did business in Iraq as well. Now, the Washington Post reported that despite strict economic sanctions, Halliburton did up to $73 million in business with Iraq while Cheney was heading the company. And I thought I wanted to get this bit in about Mr. Cheney.
Arthur, am I to sort of interpret that you don't specifically like Mr. Cheney?
I don't like Mr. Cheney, I don't like Mr. Rumsfeld, and I don't like that fanatic John Ashcroft.
How about Mr. Kerry?
And I don't like Mr. Kerry.
Gee, you don't like much of anybody.
No, I believe Mr. Kerry's three wounds can be covered by the length of one Band-Aid, and I think he's a fraud as well.
All right. Well, I think what a tragedy it is, Arthur. What a great country like this has the option of voting for one or two members of a secret society, and that's the Skull and Bones. Only 15 people a year get it taken into this secret occult organization, and nobody wants to talk about it. Or the fact that Mr. Kerry, as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, was the front for a secret English society created in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes. And, of course, Bush has surrounded himself from people. And both political parties, both the Republicans and Democrats, are going exactly the same direction. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Arthur Burncloud to sort of wrap up this evening's program. What's happened in Vietnam is a terrible, terrible tragedy for the people, but of course it's a terrible tragedy for America as well, because we fought a 10-year war that we never intended to win for entirely different purposes than the boys ever knew. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to wrap up the program. I just thought I'd share a story with you I heard from a friend of mine. Apparently on Hardball, Chris Matthews was talking to Pat Buchanan, and Pat Buchanan had written a book critical of the Bush regime, and so Chris Matthews said, "Well, Pat, you certainly can't be voting for John Kerry, are you?" And Pat said, "No." And, "Well, that you're going to vote for Ralph Nader? You know, you can't vote for Ralph Nader, can you?" And Pat Buchanan said, "No." So Chris Matthews of Hardball said, "Well, then who are you going to vote for? There's nobody else." And Pat Buchanan said, "I'm going to vote for Michael Perutka." And Chris Matthews of Hardball said, "Who's that?" And you see, what this does is really represents the fact that even the people in the media have not allowed to know that there are other legitimate candidates. Michael Perutka will be on 41 ballots across America. And of course, that means they have active parties in 41 states, totally blacked out by the controlled media, of which Chris Matthews is part. And the reason that nobody is hearing about him is because our media is controlled.
But, Dr. Stan?
Right.
I'm going to vote for Michael Perutka, and I thank you for that, because I never heard of Michael Perutka until I spoke to you about it.
Well, I guess I can't advocate anybody specifically, but I will tell you he's a Christian gentleman, and I'm proud to know him. Anyway, Arthur, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Yes.
And get your address out for Veterans for Constitutional Law.
Okay, I'm Arthur Burncloud. I'm Executive Director of Veterans for Constitutional Law. And basically, we help veterans try to get their benefits that the predators at the VA try to do veterans out of their benefits. Yes, the same VA that is supposed to be beneficial to veterans, we find is a predatory organization, and we're battling them left and right in court and in other places. We're battling them to try to get legal parity for American veterans, and the name of our group is Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. Our zip code is 11777, 11777.
You have a telephone number?
Yes, our telephone number is 631-474-4261, 631-474-4261. We need donations. Every cent you donate goes to help veterans. Nobody from our organization gets a salary. We're all volunteers.
We're out of time, Arthur. Good night. God bless you.
Thank you very much for allowing me to talk on your program.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Arthur Stan back here, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there and you agree there's a problem, we do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which is how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day. So, remember, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family or subscribe to our newsletter, the number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will certainly go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there directly or indirectly on the Internet 5 hours every weekday. And we do have a weekend program that goes to 36 stations. And our job is to try to get people across America thinking. And we are reaching more people. You can tell from the response we're getting. And more people are getting the information that they're not going to get elsewhere. And an understanding that behind everything that's happening politically are the dark spirits of forces. And I believe that we are being drawn into a war in the Middle East. Maybe all the people involved in this, in the project of the American century, don't really understand that we're not going to be able to go over there. We're not going to go over there and take over all of the oil of the Middle East, and of course take over Iran, and take over Syria, and take over Lebanon, and take over Saudi Arabia, and bring democracy, because we're not trying to bring democracy. America's not a democracy. It's a republic. Democracies always precede dictatorships. History records that. Our founding fathers knew that, and our leaders do as well. But they really believe in power without understanding that we are being drawn into a terrible war that is going to have terrible repercussions for our children and our grandchildren, and more are going to die needlessly in this senseless war that we've been involved in. And until the American people understand the history of the wars, the last century, understand every single one of them was contrived, and of course, we have a wonderful syllabus. It's called Iraq, The Untold Story. It gives a history of all of the wars. And our talk called Iraq, The Untold Story, we recommend it to you. Of course, the video has got a few little glitches, and I watched one last night. We're having some trouble with production, but as a result, of course, we can give it to you a much lower price. The good story, the information's all there. If you don't mind an occasional glitch, we'll let you have those videos at a reduced price, and then, of course, you want to get the syllabus with that, which has all the documentation of the background of all the wars of the last century, from the lying about the sinking of the Maine in 1898, the lying to why we went into the First World War in 1917, the lying about the background of Pearl Harbor, the lying about the fact that the Japanese had been trying to surrender for 6 months and we wouldn't let them, the lying about how we helped the Chinese communists during the Korean War, lying about how we financed and helped finance the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, and lying about the background of why we went into Kuwait, the war in Kuwait, the first Gulf War, And then, of course, the reasons for this world war. Oh, we had to go into Iraq because Saddam was about to turn over nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction to Osama bin Laden, to the wicked Osama bin Laden, who incidentally had worked for the CIA for many years. Well, the American people have not been told the truth, and American boys are continuing to die. You need to get our video, Iraq, the Untold Story. You need to get our syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. Hold the documents in your hand. Read them. Understand the background of the secret societies that control the world today. And then, of course, we hope many of you will get in serious consideration to coming to our November 6th meeting here, all-day-long meeting. Lunch will be served at our November 6th meeting here on the North Shore of Monterey Bay. One more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 to learn about where you can stay. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. Well, until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.